live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
That was a great night of sports. Hell of a night of sports last night, so I have to decide exactly where I want to start. I could start with David Price coming up huge and the Red Sox going to the World Series. I mentioned on Twitter last night, four more wins, and that is the best Red Sox team ever. Best Red Sox team in history. Yeah, and I'm pretty well aware that Teddy Ballgame did play for them. Yaz, Fred Lynn, Jimmy Fox, Bobby Dorr. My old man was a Red Sox fan, so I know all that stuff from back in the day. I know all that, and I stand by that. Four more wins, and that's the best Red Sox team ever. I could start there, or I could start with the Denver Broncos backing up Von Miller's prediction that the Broncos would kick Arizona's ass and stop the bleeding, which they did. I could normally and would normally start with either one of those, except I'm going with a moment from last night that literally had me out of my chair in my home office in utter amazement. I mean, a pretty routine Thursday night for me. Same type of thing that I do every single night. Go up to the home office, watch some games, prep up, get ready for the next day. You know, essentially the same thing I've done every night of my life for the past 25 years. So, what is something that happened last night that could get me out of my seat and talking to myself in the home office? Let me set the scene for you. The location, Portland, Oregon. The time, 9 minutes, 26 seconds left in the first quarter of the Lakers-Blazers game. The action. Alvy, roll it.
Lehman brings the ball in. The Blazers have 12 seconds to shoot. Stolen by LeBron. LeBron on a breakaway. And the first basket of his Laker career is a tomahawk dunk. It brings the crowd to its feet. LeBron's first bucket, a spectacular dunk. Here's Lillard coming the other way with a dunk. Back to LeBron. They're going back and forth here, up and down. LeBron to the rim, another one. Two tomahawk dunks, and the building is on its feet. Timeout, Blazers, as LeBron announces his presence with authority.
Lakers radio. And I tweeted it last night. Holy crap, LeBron. But you know that's not what I said. In fact, I didn't say it. I actually yelled it out. You understand, this old head has been at this game a long time. I don't really have too many holy bleep moments. But watching him last night throw down the way he did twice in 19 seconds, that was a holy bleep moment. In my office, by myself, out of my chair, holy bleep. Because to me, it was that sick. A holy bleep moment. LeBron, in his first seconds as a Laker, throwing down, quote, without any regard for human life, and then doing it again a few seconds later. Now, don't get it twisted. I'm not planning any parades. I'm not looking to give him or them the Larry O. But damn, that was something to see. I mean, you want to talk about an old head. That old head can still get out and run, get up and finish. And you know the younger Lakers that he was brought in to lead felt the exact same way. They've never run with anybody like that. Hell, Lonzo Ball admits he's never seen anything like that. And he grew up the son of the greatest hooper ever. Just ask his old man. No, I get that they didn't win. And yes, all the concerns about the Lakers coming in were right there for everybody to see. They still can't shoot it, nor can they keep the other guy from shooting it. I mean, if Nick Stauskas did to them what he did to them, what the hell is going to happen when they run into Harden and Gordon? If Sauce Castillo is lighting them on fire, what are Steph and Clay going to do to them? Then again, when was the last time any Laker did anything that had you out of your chair screaming, holy bleep? I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome and it was weird. And weird is good.
Let's get weird.
Because the only thing more bizarre than seeing LeBron running in Laker gear was seeing Rajon Rondo doing the same right next to him. And even more insane than that was seeing Lance Stephenson running with both of them and coaching up his younger teammates in Laker gear. And yes, I am opening the show with a take about a team that lost on opening night. I'm spending a hell of a lot of time on a team that is currently 0-1. I know they're winless. I just don't give a damn. Because that didn't feel like a regular season game. It didn't even feel like an opening night. It felt bigger than that. I mean, Laker fan, honestly, let me ask you. Has getting your ass kicked ever felt better? These dudes are fun. They get out, they push it, and they've got this crazy, weird mix of crazy, old, weird dudes with young guys following them into battle. Oh, and JaVale. JaVale freaking McGee. Now, you know I don't play favorites, but you want to know who my favorite team is in the association? My favorite team. I will go on record and say it right now. And then you can hold me to this and point back to, yeah, Roman, but how credible are you? You said your favorite team is. I'll tell you who it is. My favorite team in the NBA is the team that scratches JaVale his checks. That's who my favorite team is. But then again, I know not to get ahead of myself. And LeBron does too. LeBron was preaching patience after that game.
I always kind of compare it, you know, to like instant oatmeal. It's not that fast. It takes a while for the chemistry to get to where you can close your eyes and know exactly where your guys are, you know. So, you know, that's what we're going to work towards.
Kind of a lame analogy, but I see it working. I see it working. We all remember Miami starting 9-8 when LeBron first got there. We all remember Cleveland being much worse for a longer period of time when he returned home there. I know it's not going to happen overnight. I know they lost. And I know it'll probably get worse before it gets any better. But I did like what I saw last night. They might be winless, but at least they matter again. Something that nobody has said about that team in a minute or two. And again, I'll say it right now. While I'm not thinking about the Lario, I'm thinking if they make a three or two and then get a hand in somebody's face beyond the arc, they may in fact be a playoff team. Yeah, I said it. I mean it. This year, in this conference, they may in fact be a playoff team. So go put a mural up for that old man because he's still got something in the tank. And the Lakers matter again. That was something to see. There's no opening night for a borderline playoff team in the West. Nothing could happen that would get me out of my seat. I wouldn't think. In my home office by myself. But he did. Twice in 19 seconds.
Two tomahawk dunk.
We are joined by PJ Tucker. PJ, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, bud?
Good, good. Great to talk to you. All right, so you're coming off a tough season opening loss. I know you're not going to spend much time on that. You're not going to panic over one game. So how much are you looking forward to getting back on the court tomorrow night and getting back to work against the Lakers?
Looking super forward to it. You know, it's early in the season. New team. We got some new additions. You know, early in the season, try to get it, try to find your rhythm, try to find, you know, kind of where your team's going to be. You know, it's a long season.
I'm sure Lakers would tell you the exact same thing after last night. PJ Tucker is my guest. You know, when I watch you play, it feels to me like there's not a guy in the league that you can't guard. Does it feel the same way to you? And how much pride do you take in the fact that if you're guarding somebody, they're going to be in for a long night? They have to know they're going to be in for a battle.
Oh, I take super pride in that. You know, that's my thing. Defense, I always feel like defense wins games. You know, so many guys in the league can really score the ball. There are not a lot of people can guard them. good offense, good defense any day. But, you know, you put that time and effort into trying to stop somebody, makes it a lot easier on them here. So it's just one of those things that, you know, you kind of take pride in.
We're talking to PJ Tucker. You mentioned that it's a new season, a new team, and you guys are trying to gel. Looking at the chemistry of your team, like you've known Melo since you were teenagers, and then you and Chris go way, way back. In fact, even further than that, knowing these guys the way you know these guys, how would you describe the chemistry of the team right now?
The chemistry is amazing. It's funny because even in a loss, you know, we still know the things that we did wrong. but the chemistry and guys knowing each other and figuring it out, I think that plays a major part in you know, how things go after losses, you know, how things go in the locker room. All that stuff plays a part, and you kind of love that because when you have chemistry with guys like we have here, who guys have long-standing relationships outside of basketball, it makes it a lot easier. And, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of just know where things are going to gel.
You know, and then and it's an example of that chemistry. There's a piece in the Bleacher Report, a really touching description of when you saw Chris Paul get hurt in the conference finals, that it hurt you so much, you couldn't even look him in the face. What was it like to see your childhood friend get injured like that when you were both so close to a goal that you've spent your entire lives working towards?
It was tough. It was tough. Knowing, you know, everything he's been through, you know, all the criticism he gets, you know, not doing so great in the playoffs, you know, having that chance to really be, you know, in that situation and have a chance to win the NBA title and go to the finals was huge. And, it, you know, it definitely hurt me. You know, it hurt a lot. And, you know, that gives us a little drive this year you know, come back, and that's why we came up with the, you know, run it back, because we feel like we were right there, and you know, we had a chance to do it.
Want to make this weekend even better? Head over to MyBookie and get in on all the action. Who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, they are the very best bet this season. They have been in business for years, they have great reviews online, and their mobile site is so easy to use. I would only recommend a service to you that I've been using myself. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join right now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME and activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account, and you can claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid with MyBookie. Houston Rocky at PJ Tucker is my guest. You know, your background's amazing. Your story really is something. I mean, the fact that we're even having this conversation is pretty remarkable when you consider how your career started. You were drafted by the Raptors back in 06, and initially you didn't see a ton of minutes, and then you got labeled a tweener, and then you were waived. You've made the point that if you get called a tweener, that can end your career. In fact, PJ, I've seen this over and over again. Once you get hit with a label in professional sports, it's hard to shake it. So when Toronto waived you, what was that feeling like, and how concerned were you?
You know, it was terrible. It was one of the worst moments of my life, you know. But I tell people all the time it was one of the best moments of my life because it changed my mindset. It changed a lot of things that, you know, kind of built my whole ground, you know, the ground level of my professional career. You know, I wouldn't change anything. It was one of those things that, you know, makes you grow up. You know, in college you think, you know, I'm all American, I'm this, I'm that, I'm going to NBA and everything's fine, it's smooth sailing, and it's not like that. You know, it's a whole other situation, and something that you have to work at totally different and a completely different level. So for me, it was the gift and the curse.
Interesting. So what about your mindset? What did your mindset turn to at that point?
Being a professional. You know, I had some good veterans around me that told me to, you know, go to Europe, go get better. You know, my coach at the time, Sam Mitchell, helped me out a lot. You know, he thought that was the best thing for me, and that it would help me in the end. And then I couldn't see it. You know, I didn't see it at all. But he was right in the end. You know, it made me really go over there and work, get better, become professional. And, you know, in the end, it definitely ended up working out.
PJ Tucker, my guest. All right, so you went to play in Israel and then Ukraine. What were those experiences like?
Oh, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Tell me.
To say the least. Israel was amazing. Amazing country, amazing people. The league was amazing because it had a lot of Americans, a lot of really good players over there, and they love basketball. So that was amazing for me. And Ukraine is just a whole other world. You know, it's like it's just a completely different world. People there, basketball is not so big. You know, they're more into soccer, but you know, the owners there really love basketball, and you know, a lot of good players. But the level of I'm trying to explain Ukraine. It's the hardest thing ever.
Well, okay, how about this? Maybe this will help. There's a story from Ukraine that the team owner came into the locker room with a bunch of security guards and a duffel bag. What was in the bag, and then how did the team play that night?
Wow. Hey, you know what? The team just looks at me and go, hey, come on, we need you tonight. All the Ukrainian guys are like, okay, all right, we need you to kill it tonight. All right, let's do this.
Okay, but what? So what was in that bag?
Oh man, it was like 150,000-200,000 cash.
So the money was going to who for what?
It was, and they split it out. They split it out. So it's like, hey, win this game. You know, we gotta beat my buddy. Y'all do this. I got this for you right here.
All right. So what happened? How'd the game go? What'd you do that night?
That night we won. We won. Uh-huh. So all the Ukrainian guys loved me, so it was great. I had like 40 points.
PJ Tucker, so where'd you go? You guys hit the club afterwards or what?
No, we were on the road, actually. We were on the road. so we drove back. We had like a 3-hour drive back, and I've never seen guys smile and be so happy.
We're talking to PJ Tucker for a few more moments. So what was it like when you were overseas? I mean, were you focused on the task at hand, or were you always thinking, I've got to get back to the league. I've got to get back to the league. I'm going to find a way back to the league.
No, honestly, it was just leveling up over there. You always think about leveling up, getting to, high levels of making money and being on the best teams over there. And that comes with winning. It's all about winning over there. So for me, it was just taking each step to try to get better, and better my career. I didn't know the NBA was going to happen. So for me, I couldn't focus on that, because when you focus on that, then, that never ends the way you want, because that didn't happen a lot.
We're talking to PJ Tucker. So you made it back, and I'm going to skip over a few things, and you finally get an opportunity. And then after you work your way to this point, there's actually a bidding war for you in 2017 where the Rockets were interested, the Raptors were interested. You actually took less money to play for Houston. What did you like about the Houston situation that you were willing to leave some money on the table?
I wanted to win. At the end of the day, through it all, I wanted to win. And seeing the situation, talking to the Rockets. My agent had been talking to the Rockets for years about me coming there and me trying to figure it out at the same time, just looking at the whole team, the makeup of the team, the coach, the front office. Everything just seemed perfect and like a perfect situation for me. So at some point, money has to fall back and waver when you want to win.
Listen, I would call you the greatest sneakerhead in the association, but I don't need to, because you were actually voted the sneaker champ in the Players Association voting. When did you first become a sneakerhead, and what's the one pair that you're most proud of?
It's so funny. Everybody talks about it so much, but I don't even think about it. It's just one of those things where you grow up as a kid, and I really just love wearing my shoes in games, and basketball shoes are meant to be played in games. For me, just one of those things. And when I was a kid, from the beginning, 6-7 years old, whenever I got a new pair of shoes, I just loved playing in them, and it just kind of grew from there. And my most prized possession right now will probably be, that's tough. My LeBron 6 Stewies. They're probably the number one right now.
There it is. It's really funny, because when you were in Phoenix, people didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. And like you said, you were just a kid. You didn't give it much thought. Man, there are websites that are devoted to what you're wearing. So people are paying close attention now. Rockets at Lakers tomorrow. PJ Tucker, my guest. PJ, I really appreciate you. That was fun. Great to have you on the show. Thank you very much
awesome.
For doing it.
Thanks for having me.
Friday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors. With thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game, when the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. All right, let's talk some baseball. Red Sox beat the Astros 4-1 last night. They end up taking the ALCS 4-1. They're going back to the World Series, and they're doing it after David Price's first postseason win. Now, here's a statement. Stop what you're doing. Check this. I want you to hear me very clearly. Hear me loud and clear on this. 4 more wins, and this Boston Red Sox team will be the best Boston Red Sox team ever. Better than any team with Teddy Ballgame. Better than any team with Yaz, or Jim Rice, or Dwight Evans, or Fred Lynn, or Ellis Burks. Man, I hate to say it, because he's one of my favorite Red Sox players ever. Dustin freaking Pedroia. Even worse, I'm going to say 4 more wins, and this is the best Red Sox team ever, and Pedroia's not playing. I mean, maybe not beloved like that 04 team, but better than them? Hell yes. They just won 4 straight against the defending world champions. They eliminated 100-win teams in back-to-back series. They got huge production from the bottom of their lineup once again. This time, Rafael Devers doing the damage.
All right, Rafi at the plate. Here's the pitch. And he swings and hits one in the air to left field pretty well. Back goes Kemp. Back toward the wall. Looking up. And this ball is gone! 3-run homer, Rafi Devers. 4-0 Red Sox.
Red Sox Radio. And again, when you've got a guy like that doing that kind of damage at the bottom of the lineup on the stage that big against Justin Verlander, that's how dangerous the Red Sox are. I mean, this group is good. Really freaking good. Four wins away from being the best Red Sox team ever. And last night, David Price was good. Really freaking good. For a pitcher as good as Price is, he has had a horrible postseason record. And you know that's weighing on him. How could it not? Even if the postseason in baseball is kind of a crapshoot, even if other great pitchers have struggled in the postseason, you know that was weighing on him. And last night, he had none of that. No struggles. Or as Rick Porcello put it, quote, he didn't miss once. That's above and beyond. In the regular season, you're thinking about mechanics and your catcher. Postseason, it's all about competing. Your bleep that day is your bleep that day. It depends on what you bring. And he brought it, end quote. What he brought was his best bleep, because that's a great Astros lineup. A World Series good Astros lineup. And he dominated. He didn't give them a chance. He dominated. Six innings, nine strikeouts, three hits, no walks, and a huge improvement from the first two starts of the postseason. And on top of that, he did it on 3 days rest because Chris Sale couldn't go. So that's stepping up in a huge way. That's manning the hell up. This is what an ace does. This is what he had to do, and he did it. And that was the start that got the Red Sox back into the World Series. Again, not a game they had to have. They were up 3-1. They could have lost that game. They would have gone back to Boston. They wouldn't have finished, I'm sure. They would have gone back up 3-2, had a lot of confidence, but it was a game that David Price needed. And now he's going to go into the World Series with a lot of confidence. And he said last night, it was, quote, one of the most special days I've ever had on the baseball field, end quote. I mean, damn right it was. Damn right it was. And that's coming from a guy who's had a lot of special days on the baseball field. And maybe the most special part is this guy's not going to have to answer that question ever again about how come you don't have a win? What's going on in the postseason? Why do you have so much trouble? He said, quote, I don't have to prepare myself for it in spring training on February 20th or September when I've still got five regular season starts. I don't have to answer that question anymore. And man, it feels good. End quote. It's got to. And the only thing that would feel better than winning the game that sent the Sox to the World Series would be winning the game that wins the Sox the World Series. Man, this team is so good. They are so good. And it's about time their manager, Alex Cora, got the respect that he deserves. First season as a manager, and he does this. I don't care how talented that team is, you don't just write up that lineup card and then sit back and watch it. Cora does way more than that. And just because he makes it look easy does not mean that it is easy. This guy's always working. And now he and his crew are four wins away from history. Four more wins, and to me, they are the best Red Sox team ever. So put some respect on it. Put some respect on Price, who got the job done last night, and the manager, Alex Cora. First-year manager doing an amazing job. And they're four wins away. Milwaukee, L.A., what's going to happen tonight? Are the Dodgers going to finish? Zach Cunningham is my guest. Zach, it's great to have you on. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Doing good.
Good. You beat the Bills on Sunday. I mentioned you had 13 tackles in that game. The defense stepped up in a big way to help out the offense and secure that win. What did you make of the way the defense played and showed up on Sunday?
Yeah, I feel like we played great team defense when we showed up on Sunday. You know, everyone played together. Everybody knew what job they had to do, and we came out there and played with a lot of energy and did it together.
Zach, the season, of course, didn't start the way you would have liked with three straight losses, but you've won three straight since then. You're in first place right now, a tie for first. So what's been the biggest difference over the last three games from the first three games?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
What's been the biggest difference in the last three games as compared to the first three games?
Oh, yeah, that goes back to, you know, like I said, playing together. Everybody's, you know, communicating better. Everybody's coming together more as a team. I feel like that we've worked on that. We've improved on that going week by week.
We're talking to Zach Cunningham. You know, Zach, so what was it like when you guys started 0-3? You knew you were better than your record indicated, of course. Was there anybody, I mean, there was nobody in the locker room hanging their heads. What was the conversation like among the guys when you started 0-3? What was the mindset at that point?
Oh, yeah. After every game, we didn't have anyone hanging their heads. It just came back to, like, that's knowing what we had to do. It's us knowing that we, you know, the things that we need to improve on, watching the tape, and just knowing that we could do better. We didn't play up to our potential, and that's kind of how we went with it.
We're talking to Zach Cunningham. They start 0-3. They're 3-3 right now. Zach, offensively, Deshaun Watson played that game, and he had a chest injury that reportedly was a partially collapsed lung and a broken rib, and he played right through it. What's it say about his toughness, and then how much does the rest of the team feed off of that?
Yeah, they're definitely a tough player. And most of that stuff I didn't know about until we got like to the game. But yeah, that's definitely something that we used to feed off. You know, knowing that he's out there putting his body on the line. You know, that definitely gave the team a lot of energy.
And then defensively, J.J. Watt had a sack on Sunday. He's got 7 for the year, and that was after playing only 8 games in the previous 2 seasons with back and leg injuries. You know, there was a suggestion that after the injuries, he might not come back and be the same player again. How does he look to you right now, and what's he mean to the defense?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. What you said?
J.J. Watt, he had another sack. He's back from injury. How does he look to you right now, and what's he mean to the defense?
Oh yeah, he definitely means a lot to us as a defense. He's out there making plays, out there, you know, giving us energy, you know, as a leader on the defense. Him being able to be, you know, come back out there and do that stuff, it definitely fuels us and it helps us a lot.
Zach, you were 2nd on the team in tackles last season, which is really impressive given that you were a rookie. So when you look back on your first year, what was the transition like from college ball to the NFL? In other words, what was the biggest jump? Is it physical or is it mental?
For me, mostly it was mentally. Being that when I first got here, I was kind of thrown into the starting position after like week 2 or 3. So that was the biggest jump for me. And I had a lot of guys like Bernard McKinney, J.J. Watt, you know, Cushing, you know, Merciless. You know, those guys had them older vets helping me out, just helping me get acclimated to it.
You know, and then you spent a lot of time in the weight room this year and reported to camp bigger and stronger. Have you noticed the added strength, and what's that doing on the field for you?
Yeah, I definitely see the added strength. It helped me improve as a player, helped me be, you know, put me in a position to make more plays.
Now, you're still early in your career, but your teammates are already talking about you as a leader, somebody they look to for key contributions. What's it mean to know that you've earned that kind of level of respect so early in your career?
Yeah, it means a lot to me just knowing that I'm able to go out there and help out with defense. You know, like I said, we all go out there and playing together, you know, and each one of us being able to do, you know, make plays and do our job, it fuels the next person, the person right next to us. So it definitely means a lot to me.
Talking to Zach Cunningham, so what about Jacksonville? When you look at their offense, what are the things that you're looking to key on, and what's the biggest challenge they represent?
Well, yeah, you're definitely looking at the running backs, definitely looking at Bortles, quarterback, and, you know, them being in the position that they're in, us being in the position that we're in, you know, going for number one AFC South, you know, is definitely a big challenge ahead of us, and that's something that we're looking forward to, and being able to come out on top in that regard.
Big AFC South matchup, and rumor has it back in the day, you were a bit of a gamer. Is it true? Do you still play, and if so, what's your favorite game?
I think recently I've been on a game kind of like Smash Bros. It's called Brawlhalla.
Right.
Been playing that a lot.
Anybody else on the team play that game?
A couple guys, one or two of them.
That was not the best Thursday night football game I've ever seen. In fact, if we're being real, it may have been the worst. Denver beating down the Cardinals 45-10. Great for the Broncos, terrible for the Cardinals, and brutal for the rest of the world, looking to get away from the stress of their life for an hour or more. What the hell was that? Are the Broncos that good or are the Cards that bad? Probably more the latter than the former. The Broncos came in having lost 4 in a row. They needed that game in the worst way. The Cards came in having lost 5 of 6. They needed that game in the worst way. Unfortunately, only one team was going to get it, and that team was Denver. Von Miller called his shot before that game. He called his shot. This is Von Miller now. He does not do a lot of this.
I want to say it's a must win. We're going to kick that. Make sure you put that up there. We're going to kick that.
You don't see that very much from him. He said, we're going to kick their ass. Make sure you put it up there. We're going to kick their ass. And that's how bad Arizona is right now. For a guy like that to come right out and say it, we're going to kick your ass, and then do it.
We're going to kick their ass.
He said it, and then they did it. That tells you how jacked up things are in Arizona and how bad a pick that was for Trevor Price. It's okay, TP, I got you. So Von Miller said it. And then they went out and they did it. In fact, the defense basically did it all by themselves. 5 takeaways, 2 touchdowns, 6 sacks. Better yet, Miller nearly did it all by himself. 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. It's a good season for a lot of guys. That's a great season for a lot of guys. And a reminder of anybody who had forgotten about Von Miller. For anybody who thought that maybe at 29 he was slowing down, could not be further from the truth. He's still there. He's still dominant. And Denver had to have it. They needed him, and they needed that game. 4 straight losses, and that brought about questions about the coach, the front office, everything. John Elway had said the team, quote, has to play for their lives. He called the team's run defense soft. You're welcome, John. Hey, John, keep your name out your mouth. Keep your name out your mouth.
Hey, John.
And stop acting like you had nothing to do with it, John. You put that team together. Keep your name out your mouth. You knew that was going to cost somebody their job, either on the Denver side or the Arizona side, and Mike McCoy was the guy who pays. Byron Leftwich gets elevated and gets his job. Bob Holler is my guest. Bob, it's nice to have you on. How are you?
Thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. What's up?
Really good to have you, Bob. Thanks so much. I was eager to talk to you. You know, before we talk about the podcast series, which is fascinating, Bob, can you go back a little bit? As you point out in the podcast, you were at Super Bowl 46 when Aaron Hernandez caught a TD pass from Tom Brady. He did this TD celebration that had him opening up a bank vault and scattering money. What did you make of that celebration at that time, and what was your perception of Hernandez then?
Well, I saw that and I thought, you know, here's another showboating football player, right? I mean, he's doing the old strip club thing, you know, make it rain, you know, throw the money up, and back then it was a big thing, and that's just who he was. I didn't cover the team daily. I wasn't a beat reporter then. I was helping out to cover that, so I didn't get intimate relationship with him in the locker room that some of these other guys did. By intimate, I don't mean close, but because he was never close with anybody really on that team, but people who did see him in that locker room saw the two sides of Aaron Hernandez, especially his teammates.
Right, now, you start that series by going back to his hometown of Bristol, Connecticut. In the reporting that you and your fellow Globe reporters have done, and the conversations in particular with his brother Jonathan, how would you describe life for Aaron growing up?
Well, here's the thing. You know, there's a lot of myths that have arisen around this story. And one of them was that, you know, when his father died when he was 16, you know, his life started to unravel at that point, that this beloved father figure had passed, and Aaron lost his way, that his father was his, you know, moral compass, and that he sort of lived in this Ozzie and Harriet kind of life. The fact is that his father was brutally beat him, savagely beat him, and also that during that childhood he was sexually molested by somebody repeatedly as a child. And his father was an extreme homophobe. And so when Aaron, as a young boy, you know, wanted to be a cheerleader at one point, his father scotched that idea right off the bat. But more seriously, he became involved and, you know, explored his sexuality and became involved with boys sexually as early as middle school. And so he was living this double secret life that if his father had known about, he would have been in serious danger. So he, from an early age, he was living two lives, and you can only imagine that the difficulty that poses for somebody. Of course, it doesn't excuse what he did in the end, but it would kind of give a richer portrait of who this guy was.
Bob Holler is joining us. So what about that double life, Bob? Was that a complete secret? Did nobody know about that?
Well, you know, by the time he got to Foxborough in the Patriots, I mean, he certainly could be charming in some ways, and you know, people saw him, you know, playing with the children of staffers on the field afterwards, very charming. And but at the same time, he was hanging with thugs, and the teammates saw that, and they saw his erratic behavior in the clubhouse, in the locker room, some, you know, volatile, potentially violent behavior. He told Wes Welker in his first month in camp that it mess him up. I'm using F him up is what he said if he didn't watch his step. And these guys knew. And one player in particular, Dane Fletcher, told us he saw him with his thug friends. He saw Boston police detectives question Aaron and his thug friends around the time of that double murder in Boston. He was aware of the flop house that Hernandez had, to take him there and dropped him off. And that's a place where the Patriots actually helped Hernandez secure that flop house, which they've never admitted. in this place where he's storing his ammunition and drugs and hung with his Bristol ex-cronies, cronies and ex-convicts.
Bob Hoare joining us at Flophouse. What that was, Bob, that was an extra apartment, right? One separate from his primary residence. So, I mean, you kind of got into this, but what was going on in the apartment? What was stored there? And the team actually helped him get that?
Right. So the Patriots have never really been forthcoming about their role in all of this. And, 4 months before he killed Odin Lloyd, Aaron Hernandez sat down with Bill Belichick at the annual combine there in Indianapolis in a hotel room and said, listen, my daughter and my fiance, their lives are in danger. I want to be traded to a West Coast team. This is according to his agent. I want to be traded to a West Coast team. Belichick himself told the state police in a report that we've obtained that yes, he did tell me that their lives are in danger, and that he wanted to be more safe. Belichick never told the law enforcement any of this. The Patriots never told law enforcement any of this, that people's lives are in danger. Hernandez's agent also says that Hernandez told Belichick that he himself thought his life was in danger and wanted to be traded to a West Coast team to get out of there. And Belichick said no. So on top of saying no and not telling anybody, which would have possibly led police to solve that double murder and perhaps prevent Odin Lloyd's murder, nobody outside of the Patriots was told about that. In addition, Belichick said, hey, you know, we'll help you find another place to live. I assume he was looking for a safer place to live, but what it turned out to be was this run-of-the-mill apartment 12 miles from his home where he didn't even tell his fiance where he was living. He just sort of hung out there with his boys and got in trouble.
Investigative reporter Bob Hoare is joining us. And then Bob, on top of all that, Bob Kraft has always said something to the effect of he was duped by Aaron Hernandez. Do you buy that?
Well, it's really hard to buy that. I mean, you've got to believe that Belichick never told the Krafts that this was that he had that meeting with Hernandez, and you have to believe that the players in the clubhouse in the locker room who saw him behaving in all these erratic and violent, potentially violent ways never told the Krafts about that. Jonathan Kraft, the president of the team, the owner, Robert Kraft's son, went on the radio soon after the Lloyd murder and said, you know, Bill Belichick would never, get a safe house for a player. If he were told that somebody's life was in danger, he'd tell our security chief and and would tell law enforcement. Well, that never happened. So either they never got the information, or it's questionable what they were saying.
So Bob, why do you think they didn't say anything? Why did they keep that to themselves? Why didn't they pass that along to law enforcement?
Well, you know, these guys are commodities, as you know. They're valuable pieces, and Hernandez is a very valuable player at that time. They had just signed him to a $41 million contract with a $12.5 million guaranteed signing bonus. That's a big investment. And to never mind not telling the law enforcement, they didn't even want to trade him or get rid of him. They needed him on their team, and It's hard to get into their heads, but the results are the results, the consequences are the consequences.
Bob Hoare is my guest. Now, on the podcast, Bob, Hernandez's agent, Brian Murphy, tells a story about how that contract that you just mentioned, that after Aaron signed the contract, Murphy told him that he'll earn respect by how he plays on the field and how he lives off of it. Murphy said that Hernandez said that he earns respect with weapons. And then in testimony, Murphy said that Hernandez showed him weapons. When Murphy looks back on his role in Hernandez's life, what does he think?
Well, here's the thing about it. So Brian Murphy, he's represented more than 150 players. He's a pretty well-established and fairly well-respected, very well-respected guy. I'm going to give him credit because he stood up here. He met with me and said, listen, I failed miserably. My job is to represent Aaron and get the best out of him, not just sign him to big marketing deals and big contracts, but to make him a better person, better member of the community. And I failed miserably at that. So I give him credit for that. I haven't heard the Patriots. Bill Belichick had a news conference after the arrest of Aaron Hernandez and said, listen, you know, we do our best to screen these guys, and sometimes we fail. In this case, I guess we fell short. So if that's all they've ever said in terms of taking responsibility for their role in all of this. But Murphy did, Murphy did stand up, I think.
Bob Holder joining us, part of an investigative report in a podcast series talking about Aaron Hernandez. So, Bob, in July of 2012, Hernandez was in Cure Lounge with Alexander Bradley. Somebody spilled a drink on Hernandez. What happened next?
So, 2 hours later, apparently he's brooding over this and just circling, waiting and stalking and waiting for these guys to come out of the bar. And he and his buddy Bradley ambushed them at the red light, three blocks away from the bar, and they killed them. They killed these two guys it's incredible to believe that somebody would be killed over this kind of stuff. But when Odin Lloyd was murdered, there was no clear motive for that either. It was just some nonsense about maybe, he said something to somebody in the bar. And when Alexander Bradley, he shot his own friend Bradley in the head too, over what, Bradley said was, just disagreements over, little things. So some of this points to the fact that he was probably drunk in some of these cases. And, he's a high chronic user of marijuana, high is the operative word. But in addition to that, it makes you look at the issue of CTE, right? So we know that he had the worst case of CTE in anybody that ever seen at his age. And the issues that arise with somebody with CTE are, rage, inability to control your impulses, your decision making. You have this emotional volatility, and finally, the suicide thoughts as well. So that, I think, applied to Hernandez. Doesn't excuse it, but I think it helps explain it.
I mean, Bob, this whole story is so unbelievable, and it's so insane, and there's so many layers. I can understand why a podcast series is necessary, so I'm doing my best to cover this with you in the few moments that we have. But, again, the question keeps coming up. How did a high-profile guy like this keep getting into situations like this, and nobody in football knows? I mean, did people involved in football in high school, in college, in the NFL really have no idea, or did they just not want to know who this guy was?
Well, I think what we've found, and I think you've seen it throughout your career, that these kids, when they become elite athletes in high school, from that moment on, they're coddled, right? I mean, they're enabled, and it takes a very strong organization or executive of strong character to really step up and say, we're going to suspend you for a year, we're going to throw you off our team, we don't want guys like you around here. But that's not happening. At Florida, the University of Florida, he got in beefs. He got in, sucker punch. When he was 17 years old, they brought him out of Bristol High School in Connecticut before he finished his senior year, at the Christmas time of his senior year, 6 months early. And before that next semester, he should have been in high school. And instead, he's in a bar in Gainesville, and he sucker punches the bar manager over a paltry, bar tab and ruptures his eardrum. No consequences. And then later he's involved at one of his best friends, the Pouncey twins. Somebody rips a chain off of one of the Pouncies, and moments later, that person gets shot. And so Hernandez had nothing to do with the shooting, but he's involved in those kinds of scenes, and no consequences. Life goes on. He was suspended for a game for testing positive for weed, but, then he gets to the Patriots, and again, they see these warning signs, these red flags, and life goes on. The Patriot way is really, in a lot of ways, geared to winning and what these players do on the field more than off it.
What about his teammates? What did they make of him? What did they think of him?
Well, he had very few, in fact, really no close friends on the Patriots. They saw the way who he was, and many of them steered clear of him. They saw his his ex-convict buddies he was hanging out with, And Belichick himself saw, he told the state police he thinks he saw him with Ernest Wallace, one of his cronies from Bristol, Connecticut, who was with Hernandez when he killed Odin Lloyd. And Wallace is now in prison for his role in that as well. So they knew, and many of them tried to steer clear. I mean, Brandon Lloyd, who was a star receiver for many years in the league, he said, I was warned the day I got there, steer clear of this guy. But you can't avoid him. He's just he's a very high profile sort of attention seeker in the locker room, and he's He's all over the map. You know, he could be hyper-masculine 1 minute, Lloyd said, and the next minute he's talking about cuddling with his mother and having his mother bathe him and, you know, just sort of this incredibly erratic, inexplicable behavior.
So, Bob, really quickly, before you go, in terms of his sexual orientation, based on your reporting, what was his sexual orientation and how well-known was it?
Well, it wasn't well known, and you know, we didn't set out to explore his sexual orientation. We came upon just in the course of our reporting, we came upon his high school quarterback, one of his high school quarterbacks, who said, "Listen, you know, when the news came on that Aaron had died, this kid, young man now, former Marine actually, was with his father, and his father said, man, you know, there was talk about Hernandez had written a love letter to a prison lover, which we never have verified at all. But he said, geez, he wasn't gay. And the father said, and the son said, well, Dad, you know, I that's not true. I was involved with him way back then. So clearly bisexual to some degree. You know, what factored in eventually in the end was that, you know, there was the idea that he may have committed suicide because he's in prison where he, again, was trying to hide his sexuality. It wasn't a good place to be when you're, you know, living in a gang-controlled prison where you're supposed to be, one of these masculine football stars. And a local radio station here outed him, basically, 2 days before he died. So the issue of sexuality has come up in terms of, you know, an important issue in terms of perhaps the end of his life. So we did go down that road when this player raised his relationship with him, and it's fascinating to think about that. You know, there's no openly gay player in the NFL that we know of, and so Hernandez was trying to lead that double secret life as well in the NFL.
Bob Hoare is my guest. You know, Bob, the story is absolutely impossible to sum up in a few words or sentences, of course. But as you look at the totality of Aaron Hernandez's life, what do you see?
Well, I see a sad story. I mean, I see a kid who was, by all accounts, by every account, you won't find anybody who knew this kid before he was, through high school even, to the late, very end of high school. You won't find anybody who didn't say this is a happy-go-lucky kid, you know, doing his best, even while he was secretly being beaten and molested. This was a kid who loved football, loved life, and did his best. And things went terribly wrong. And you know, he like I said, no excuses. He pulled the trigger. But when you think about all that's happened, and especially when you see the cases of CTE, a lot of these guys, you know, 16 guys have killed themselves in recent years. Former NFL players, each of them had CTE. Others weren't examined for CTE, but some of them, Jovan Belcher, as we know, took a life before he took his own. Lawrence Phillips was diagnosed with CTE. He was violent, criminally violent. So you have to look at some of that as well, as what the damage this game inflicts on the players who play it.
Bob Hoare is a sports investigative and enterprise reporter for the Boston Globe and a reporter on Gladiator, Aaron Hernandez, and Football, Inc. It's a podcast series from the Boston Globe and Wondery. Episodes were released on Mondays. As I mentioned, Bob, it's impossible to cover something like that in one conversation, but I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate that conversation, and continued success and good luck with the podcast series.
Thanks so much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
They're ready. Racing.
Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday morning to you. What's going on? Hope you had a great weekend. Another wild, wild NFL weekend, and we are all over it. Nice to have you here. All right, starting with the NFL.
Yeah! Touchdown! Kansas
you know
City.
What you get with Patrick the Patriots, Mahomes. And now we know what you get with the Chiefs. The rare time that I don't give a damn about the scoreboard. Nate Peterman is back, baby. It takes a special quarterback to come into a huge game and steer a team to victory. And that's what Nate Pete did for the Texans. And not only did he have another pick six yesterday, it was a game-winning pick six. CFD22. Charles, good morning. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I love when they call for the slump buster. I mean, you can't beat that.
Dude, if you knew who she was talking about, you'd like it even better. Flight deck. My man.
No wonder you hit so good. You're hammering slump buster.
Young prospect from the Baffert Shed Row. Real intention was never going to lose.
Bob and I have had a little discussion. I think we're going to bury the hatchet. I'm starting to like Bob a lot. And the NFL is better with the Rock Lobster. Whether he's lighting himself on fire or lighting somebody else on fire, he's going to light something on fire.
I just know the guy couldn't go today. Go ask him.
Gaze is over it.
I'm over
Live
it.
Live from New
What's
York.
What's cracking? A tremendous Tuesday to you. You're probably wondering, what are you doing in New York, Rome? Got to come back and pay respect to the CBS Sports Radio fam.
Email.
We're happy to have you here with us in New York. Signed. Attitudes.
Don't
everything bagels. Rats. And women that have dirtier mouths than men.
Hey, John.
Emails suck in California, and they suck here in New York.
Welcome to New York.
Ryan Koppelman joining me in studio.
I was 30 years old. I was in a job I didn't love. It's a blocked writer. So my best friend David and I went in a basement and wrote Rounders.
Play that man his money.
A year and a half later, that movie was in theaters, and our life, professional life, started.
Rodgers in the shotgun formation.
Everything's coming up. Cheese.
Henley catch. Touchdown!
I've got three more words for you. That Rodgers throw. You should watch this guy, and you should appreciate this guy, because we will never see his like ever again. Dale Earnhardt Jr.
I was racing scared for one of the first times in my career. That was the moment when I had sort of exposed my secret to my crew chief and my team.
Tony Luffman.
We're expecting my wife and I, and we're so excited. One of the things I can't wait to do is share the smack off with our son, because that's a really impactful experience.
Frank Isola, New York legend. Frank, are you still beefing with Lil Wayne?
I didn't mean that you can't take Lil Wayne seriously. I just meant that you can't take Odell Beckham seriously. Tell him that the Giants, when he brings his buddy in with him, and he's nodding in agreement to everything he said.
With guest host Brett Napier on
Always phenomenal to be in the jungle. You know how many bad postseason starts he's had? Don't call.
Where's your club, bro?
Where's my club? Really?
They're in the Bahamas, right? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Hey, Craig, when Clayton Kershaw wins a World Series and pitches good, can give me a call. Hello, Sam.
You have Kamala Anthony, who's a better player than Trevor Ariza and Mabute combined.
I totally disagree with that. No, he's not. He's not better than those guys combined. You're crazy. Not a chance. You're way off base here.
That is a trash narrative.
Please, just stop it. He is not. Let's get to Bert.
What a smoke show of a wife you have, Grant. You must have $10 million and a crank the size of that microphone you're talking
about. Wow. If nobody sits in this chair, I never get another day off.
You're lucky he even performs for you bastards. Leave me here alone.
Ty Montgomery, it's I appreciate you, especially to come on the show during a bye week.
No problem. Thank you. For some reason, I love you guys. I just can't stay away from you. I love
it. This sports update is no ordinary update. It stars a guy who came in on his off day with cheesecake. My man.
What's up, bro?
Awesome to see you as well.
Got to do it more often.
Mason Fine.
I was kind of like a chicken with a head cut off out there trying to play football.
I flew out to San Diego last week to make an impromptu visit, and the dude shot me down and said that I was not cool enough to show up.
I told all the clones to off.
I'm doing everything I can to keep this train on the tracks. Flight Deck Friday.
Basket of his Laker career.
I know they didn't win. I know they're 0-1. But for the first time in a long time, the Lakers are relevant once again.
This lame comes in with a top 10 list. So strong, Matthew. A top 10 list wouldn't have worked in 1988, let alone 2018. You loser.
How about those idiots traveling thousands of miles to see Rich Ackerman?
I'll bet you an entire mortgage payment of yours, $200, that I'm whipping that ass. I'm more Rick's red puffy piss tank nose.
Goo Goo Dolls or Rush. Reaction. PJ Tucker. What was in the bag?
It's like $150,000, $200,000. Hey, win this game. I'll do this. I got this for you right here.
What'd you do that night?
That night we won.
Hey, Wanda, how are you?
Hey, Jim Rump. Actually, Titan Woman.
Oh, Titan Woman.
Ah. Cool. A lot of panic. Code Brian.
We're all about Funyuns and Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets.
I got hit. I got tackled. My glasses went flying.
Broke my glasses.
Regis Philbert.
Brock Lobster forever.
Ear muffs.
Stop ruining my talk show. I love it.
It's been awesome talking with you.
Come find me. I'm going to win this battle against the system.
Because who says no to a cookie?
Two Tomahawk Ducks.
Peace.
I'm out. Good night now.
Hey, Rick, in Buffalo, in no way did I mean to disrespect you by going to that guy, but I didn't see you. Now it's your show. Rick in Buffalo. Rick, what's up?
I've been critical of LeBron in the past, Jim, but I got to give him some credit here. He definitely made the right choice going to Los Angeles. He fits in perfectly with the rest of you arrogant, self-absorbed scumbags. Leaving your hometown once is pretty bush league. Doing it twice makes you the biggest a-hole ever. And Jim, you gotta stand in awe of Major League Baseball umpires this postseason. The way they've butchered their craft is nothing short of spectacular. If being old, fat, and stupid is all it takes to be a Major League ump, I'm going to have my old man wire his resume tomorrow. Joe West looked like a circus elephant out there the other night. And not only did he blow the call, we had to wait 20 minutes for him to walk to the dugout for the review. No wonder these games take 5 friggin' hours. I'd say Rob Manfred's going to fix the problems, but he'll just screw things up even more. And props to you, Jim, for planning your trip to the New York studios on Ackerman's day off. I wouldn't want to see that loser either. The only ones dumb enough to travel thousands of miles to hang out with Rich Ackerman reside in Western Canada. Way to live it up, boys. And of course, after I shredded Tyler last week, Matt was the first one to jump in on Twitter. At least he didn't make us suffer through another one of his pathetic calls. Let me tell you how bad a caller Matt and Van is. After being gifted another smack-off invite, this lame comes in with a top 10 list. So strong, Matthew. A top 10 list wouldn't have worked in 1988, let alone 2018. Parody Larry thought a top 10 list was a terrible idea. Maybe next year you can do some stupid pet tricks for us, you loser. War backstage passes for the Goo Goo Dolls homecoming show tonight. On War Rush, 3 more Canadian lames. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Holy crap, Rick. Rack him. He took a run at the fellas in Canada. Matt and Van, Tyler and Shredmonton. I knew one or both would be in. Let's go to Matt. Hey, Matt, what's up? How are you?
What's good, pimp? Did that Goo Goo Doll-loving freak, Dirty Rick in Buffalo, the world's largest trailer park, just come at me and my guy Ackerman Rome? Rick, this guy, you look like an alcoholic Brad Childress, man. And you went on the record on Woodscopes that you wore a diaper during your smack-off call. Ackerman rolls with the likes of Regis Philbin. I roll with the likes of Ty Domi while you're rolling around with a crack whore named Tammy. Rick, if your aged-out ass is vigilant with your hard medicine and your diabetes doesn't claim you before smack-off 25, man, I'll bet you an entire mortgage payment of yours, $200, that I'm whipping that ass. I'm more Rick's red, puffy, piss tank nose. Thanks for the quick minute, bro. Peace.
Rack him. Matt in Vancouver.
Good night now!